He's a little pitch.
Oh, is that your stick?
Yeah.
Oh my god, it's broken in the middle.
That's funny. Should I close this thing?
Nah, just. Such a big room.
Where's the is that how I click
yeah.
it? Just like click on the thing? Mm-hmm. Okay. I think they're still like okay, so finally for Anton, Royal Caribbean Cruises. It's a Norwegian-American cruise line company. They operate 40 ships to 400 destinations. They currently employ 60,300 people. It's the second biggest cruise liner, not only by revenue, but also by fleet size. Serves 4 million passengers annually and owns 23.8% of the entire cruise market worldwide. It operates Royal Caribbean International, which is mainly for the US and the Caribbean market, but also has Europe-specific brands such as Croisières de France, which is for the French-speaking market, and it has a 50% joint venture with TUI Cruises for the German market. So they're very much trying to break into the European market because it's not as saturated as the American market. They also own an airline, Pullman Tour Airline in Madrid, Spain, which is a charter airline bringing Europeans into the Caribbean. The industry standing, so Royal Caribbean Cruises is the second biggest cruise liner in the industry after Carnival. Their current share price stands at $29.9 with a 52-week high of $44 and a low of $20. Their PE ratio for the last fiscal year is 9.96. It's actually the second lowest PE ratio in the industry after MGM International. The industry they're in is called Resorts and Casinos. Their profit margins are significantly above their five-year average points, with their gross profit margin at 34.4 and their net profit at 8.6%. Their revenue growth was 10.6% and their earnings per share 2.77. Now, to the cruise industry in general, it's a very growing market. There's lots of demand. Right now, we see a lot of growth from emerging markets, and especially through the launch of big ships, which is great for us because we own 10 out of the 17 largest ships and we own the two biggest ships overall in the entire world. Cruise shipping demand worldwide more than doubled in the last decade and is now the fastest growing segment of the entire travel industry. Europe has seen an especially big growth with 33% growth in the past 5 years. And although the US market is now the biggest market, so 66% of revenues comes from the US, the market's actually not that saturated because there are surveys estimating that there are 127 million potential passengers. And out of these potential passengers, only 17% have actually taken a cruise. So there's lots of demand for people to go, like, be a first-time cruiser. Yeah. Dylan, that's you.
And in the past 11 years, the worldwide cruise industry has doubled. They began investing $300 million last year.
Sorry, that's million, not billion.
Million, not billion.
Over the last, not that rich.
Over the last years, as part of the Royal Advantage upgrade program, they put in things like Wi-Fi, more exclusive, more comfortable spaces for passengers. So that's really going to improve the quality of service. Following the Concordia disaster, the Royal Caribbean cruise price dropped 6%, while Carnival London and New York dropped 16% and 14% respectively. Since then, RCL has managed to surpass the pre-disaster price by 7%, while Carnival has not even recovered, which means that Royal Caribbean Cruises...
they lost the ship. They lost 1/7 of the fleet. It's not what
No.
Carnival had 7 big ships, and Costa had 7 big ships, one of them
But Carnival has like 60
yeah,
ships.
Yeah, but the price fell a lot and they never recovered. Mm. And Royal Caribbean Cruise, their price has recovered and has since grown by 7% since the disaster. So it's a pretty strong stock. Mm. And it's in an industry that attracts 5% more passengers annually. And yes, so it's.
Right, I'll start with the obvious one.
Accident.
Regulation after the Concordia disaster was a big kind of.
They are. And there are new safety regulations.
there was talk about new safety regulations being introduced, kind of mandatory safety regulations. I know she mentioned in the report that the board directors of the kind of old men
Just before you answer the safety regulations, the board of directors, it was actually not, I didn't mean they wouldn't deal, like they wouldn't be able to deal with the new safety regulations. It was just a negative point is that the board of directors, first of all, they're all male and they're all rather old, let's say it like that. But that was more for like the creative part and the whole, you know, putting the new Wi-Fi, putting the technology, they have iPads in the stateroom. That's what I meant with the boards of directors. Safety regulations.
Yeah. For the first thing, I'm going to say that the company's been present on market for 42 years, and it's been the safest since then. They don't have any minor accidents like Concordia, who's been failing lately for forever, basically.
But I mean, talking about like perception.
Yeah,
reputation.
Exactly. They had another accident right after the Italian
one. Regulations, like straight after the Concordia accident, they started cooperating with International Maritime Organization, and they focused because they saw that there's not enough regulation when it comes to onboard safe regulations, which was basically how they accused the captain of being the reason for the failure of Concordia. So they decided to focus on developing this because they didn't think that there's enough on that. And they've always are ahead of their regulations. They're cooperating with a lot of different, in each country basically, like in US there's a like cruise vessel safety operation, something like that. And they basically cooperate with them and send suggestions on how to innovate the regulations, what other aspects that haven't been covered, like ship design, can be improved to basically raise the standards. And they are, apart from just doing that, they're always above the regulations. It's not like they just like barely meet them. They always set like they margins on that like higher than they set for general cruise industry.
And I think another thing that's important is it's not only the safety regulations, because we were a little afraid that, you know, when you take a cruise ship, you want to go on the cruise ship and you want to start your holiday right away. You don't want to have to go through metal detectors and, I don't know, safety regulations like crazy. But the target group of Royal Caribbean Cruises, which is a little higher than the ones of Carnival, so Carnival is more everyone and Royal Caribbean Cruise is a little bit more exclusive. And it's a lot of families, and they did surveys and they actually said that, you know, like for the family and for everything, they actually want these safety regulations. So it's not your typical, don't think of like the busy business traveler who goes aboard the plane and just wants to go through the safety regulations. These people are actually on board, like they, of course, you want to be safe, so.
And also I've actually run through FBI statistics on like, not the general safety, but like safety when it comes to rape or like murders on board, because this happened. And
not on our ships.
Though. Yeah, not in our ships, exactly. I could barely find any like thief accidents on like our stock, and Carnival, just like, and other of our competitors, they have incidents like that, which is also argument for our side that it's just safer. And a lot of passengers take the children, so they obviously, apart from the safety of a cruise as general, they also look at the safety inside. So I think it's a really strong thing too.
Again, like that's something.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I think you were.
You guys didn't really talk about celebrity.
Celebrity cruises.
Yeah.
That's their line. Their biggest line is actually Royal Caribbean International.
Yeah,
that owns 22 ships, and I think Celebrity Cruises owns 5. So they're much smaller than Royal Caribbean International.
They're both in the same market, which is the Caribbean.
Yes, and the U.S. Royal Caribbean is, so they do the Alaska cruises. Celebrity Cruises is even more exclusive than RCL International. So RCL International owns the two biggest ships, Allure of the Sea and Oasis of the Sea. They own, I think their passenger capacity is 6,000 passengers and 4,000 crew. And Celebrity,
they have
gardens, yeah,
inside.
Insane. Yeah, oh my god, they have the craziest things. Ice rink, climbing, you can do absolutely everything. Like, I'd be surprised if they wouldn't have elephants or something. It's absolutely insane. And yeah, you can go surfing. I think it's fun, yeah. But the celebrity cruises, because if you pay a little bit more, you want your ship to be a little smaller. I mean, there are 6,000 people is a lot of people to be, you know, with for a week. So the celebrity cruises are a little bit smaller and a little bit more exclusive. And also more expensive.
And also, I think, I don't know if you stress on that, but the fact that we have the two biggest ships on the industry, it's like something
since
that attracts the customers. Because if someone wants to go for a cruise once, they would think, oh, why not go to the biggest cruise in the world? And
bigger
we have the biggest one. And even
we
like
have the two biggest ones. We have the two biggest cruises
and
10 out of
the
17 largest.
Yeah.
So we have the biggest ships.
Industry growth.
Industry-specific
Europe?
Company.
Specifically related to this company. Europe
revenue
growth.
Revenue growth every year.
And they're building two new ships, so they just started building a ship through options. I think they exercised them like 2 months ago. That ship's going to be done 2014, and then there's another new ship, another huge ship, being finished 2012, so this year. So they have another new ship, and the big... Yeah, the Royal Advantage upgrade program, that's another thing.
They're replacing some of them.
They're replacing some, so okay, they have $300 million, and with these $300 million, they're upgrading and refurbishing the old ships to target the younger people, because another thing why we think the stock will go up in the very near future is that all the baby boomer generation retires, and that is a big target group for cruises. So that will be a growth factor. Then the young people will be attracted by the iPads, the Wi-Fi, all the activities you can actually do aboard this cruise. And also there's a big markup by when people actually come aboard the ship, they spend so much money. Because they spent the money for the cruise, but then they're like, ooh, there are all these activities. Now I need to go, you know, ice skating and rock climbing and elephant riding and I don't know what. So they spend a lot of money on the ship, so there's going to be a lot of growth just through these activities.
Slideshow. Huh? Right. Okay. So Royal Dutch Shell is one of the biggest energy companies in the world. It's up there with ExxonMobil, BP, PetroChina. It operates in two sections, upstream and downstream. Upstream is basically exploration of natural gas, oil, and renewables. Natural gas comes in about 48%, and that's actually their largest section, and the rest is oil and renewables. And then downstream is corporate manufacturing distribution. Sort of business side of things. They have a huge revenue of $470 billion. This is up from $368 billion in 2010. Their market capitalization comes in at 149.2, and they got a very good dividend yield at 4.6. Interestingly, they pay out the dividend on March 22nd, which would be very good for us if we invest. Currently, that's actually wrong there. Your return is now 13.9%, which is relatively good. Since the 2008 crisis, they've managed to come back. Talking about the oil market,
Prices are high at the moment due to Middle East tensions. There has been supply outages in places like Yemen and Syria, where the Arab Spring, as you probably know, and at the moment there's the ongoing oil embargo with Iran. This is actually good for us unless it gets too high. Oil prices will stay high. But yesterday, on the 15th of March, the US and UK agreed to try and lower oil prices by using some of their oil reserves. But this shouldn't bring the price down too much, because it's not overly significant. As you can see, the oil price tends to sort of follow the FTSE. But at the moment, yeah, obviously you can see it's rising a lot.
Okay, and James said that the Shell has 48%, and this is of natural gas as part of their portfolio. And this is one of the reasons that we're really interested in it, because we think natural gas is quite undervalued, and I've put a few charts up here to show that it hasn't really gone up very much over the past few years. It's been pretty depressed, as you can see. It's fallen year on year for the past 4 years. You can't really see, but the last time it went up was 2007, and that was very brief. And obviously, as well, compared to the Brent oil price, it is very low. And this is, you know, we think with the supply side issues, that this could be a, you know, reason for Shell to perform strongly in the future. I've got the charts up there. We've got more stuff in the handout that we made. And this is one of the reasons that we chose Shell over, because, I mean, we could have easily gone up here and pitched Exxon or BP or anyone else really and said a lot of the things we've said already. But this natural gas thing, we believe, is really key to our whole proposition surrounding Shell. And behind all this as well, there's strong things like the price over earnings ratio is, we believe it represents value for the share, as it's been a lot higher in recent years. And with the continuing strong revenue, we believe that, you know, it represents a pretty secure proposition for the portfolio. The dividend, James mentioned it. I don't know if that's going to be relevant to us at all, because, I mean, it's just in a week and a bit before it pays out. So I don't actually know if that's relevant, but if we do, there is the whole dividend as well. Another reason we've got, I put BP up there. BP still, there's the oil spill thing doesn't seem as bad as it is, but there's still ongoing compensation disputes, and I just think it's something to stay out of. Although, you know, it might be a good thing, but, you know, Shell has got a very good safety record. Apart from a couple, well, there are a few things, obviously, but it is an oil company. And also, Chevron is what we looked at Chevron as well, but it's the London listing also makes it very attractive.
If you also look at Chevron and Exxon's dividend, it comes in, I think it's 2% for Chevron, it's 2.9% for Exxon. So, I mean, at 4.6, that's almost, that put together, basically. So, pretty good.
And yeah, so we're just going to conclude. I mean, we've said pretty much everything that we need to say so far. The dividends, the price, the oil price. What we were saying, the natural gas thing is strong, but also the oil as well, like James mentioned. So I think by holding Shell, we've got, you know, it's quite safe, in that we've got the gas, you've got a renewable side, and you've got the oil side as well. And if you look at the performance relative to the FTSE in recent years, it significantly outperformed the FTSE by 12% last year. So we believe it represents a safe investment for our portfolio. If you also consider that the other thing we're looking to invest in is rock copper, so it's, you know, it will create a bit of safety in our portfolio.
Yeah, also the PE ratio is quite low. It's at 7 point something at the moment, so it's quite a nice low PE ratio. It's good.
So, yeah, if there's any further questions?
Thanks a lot, guys.
Compete against these companies, especially if they can't get access to future reserves?
Well, Shell's very diverse in a lot of countries. It's pumping, I think it's something like $5 billion into exploration next year for natural gas and oil. It's just secured a contract in Iraq where it's working with, I think it's Exxon Mobil, maybe it's Chevron. They're also trying to buy over Cove Energy. They've secured $700 million worth in some Australian oil wells, natural gas wells, they also secured something in French Guyana. So they're really pushing next year to sort of to step into a lot of those sort of large oil markets. And they do go to places like Iraq and work with oil companies out there to try and basically make the best use of those wells.
The key part for the growth as well is that the oil, although it provides Shell with strong revenue, that's not the key part that we see for growth. We're really trying to emphasise is natural gas thing, because I didn't have a clue Shell did so much natural gas before. 48%. So you're really looking, the majority of its business is in natural gas. So this is where we see growth for, because unless oil is going to, you know, significantly go up in price, which is probably not going to, you know, change Shell's revenues that much. It can't go up and much higher than it is just now. We're really trying to emphasise the whole natural gas, you know, equation, and this is where we see the room for growth in Shell.
Yeah, that's. I'm not sure about Kuwait, but I know liquid natural gas is a big part of their natural gas part of the company. I think it's the main part. If you go on their website, that's all they seem to talk about, is liquefied natural gas, basically.
Yeah, so
yeah.
It's a huge area of new technology, and
yeah.
I know that Europe has traditionally been set into these sort of 20-year contracts with Russia, but now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what we were mentioning with the supply side thing. I mean, gas is at this sort of stage now where it can't. You get into this stage now where you're looking at it's going to cost the money to supply it, which is just not going to happen. So it can't. We think it's at the point where it can only. This sounds. Yeah. It sounds a bit of a bad situation, but hopefully, you know. Is there any further questions?
How much do you want to put in stock?
Think
how much, isn't it?
It's half of our remaining capital together with Rockhopper.
Yeah.
I think it's a very safe investment. As we're saying, Rockhopper's it is slightly more risky, but then it could produce a lot more. But then Shell is a very, like I say, it's a safe long term investment, which nice diversified portfolio and gives you something to fall back on, really.
I mean, we're not proposing anything too radical here.
No.
It's the biggest stock in the FTSE, and it's
yeah.
One of the reasons I mentioned earlier on. One of the reasons we chose it was because of what our other choice or proposal is. So I think it would work quite well.
So just want to thank you guys all for the hard work again. As you know, any of the American stocks, we're not actually going to buy them. So, but we'll pretend like we will. So, you'll still get the return
until
we get the forms, and then we will buy them. But still, thanks for the hard work. It's been really impressive this year, and it's really been a huge step up, as I've said many, many times. And even from the first, second years who have done reports, I mean, I couldn't have done that in my first and second year. So, nor would I have the motivation to. So, I'm glad to see that we've changed that this year. So, I think
Alice.
Fund manager. Thank you. And Alice, I think, wants to say something too.
Yeah,
or?
I just
want
to say that it's really impressive seeing you guys work, and Alice and Setheads, because I know you've put in definite increase in hours this year, and as Anton said, like, the research reports, everyone we see will just blown away, and I know we've come across with, oh, you can do this, you can do that, and we really are nitpicking. So it really is credit to all the work that you put in, and you really should pat yourselves on the back because you've done really well.
Good job, Anton.
Thank you.